Chapter 4 of the Rambam's Shmona Prakim at webyeshiva.org with Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs. Welcome back to everyone. Here we are. Until now, and I appreciate that you've stuck with us, until now, the first three chapters, the Rambam has been speaking very theoretically, giving a kind of theoretical... Pardon me, let me just get situated here. There you go. Giving a kind of theoretical background to the makeup, the characteristics, the outline of the personality and the soul, which for the Rambam may be largely synonymous. Now, the Rambam rolls up his sleeves and gets into the practical prescriptive, until now it's been descriptive, the practical descriptive, I'm sorry, let me strike that, let me say it again, until now he's been discussing descriptively the soul and its afflictions, the personality and its flaws. Now, prescriptively, he's about to tell us how we may go about making repair, making improvement, aiming for self-improvement and growth in the areas that we've been discussing until now. And this is the central and essential fourth chapter, Berfuat Cholyei HaNefesh, the healing of the illnesses of the soul. The healing of the illnesses of the soul, of course, just by way to refresh, the third chapter, somewhat brief, is an extended building of the metaphor of physical health, healing, illness, broken arm, setting a bone, infected appendix, doing an appendectomy, to the work of the illness of the soul, personality defects, moral flaws, intellectual flaws, and trying to build this, it's really, for the Rambam, it's more than a metaphor. It's a really unified theory of wellness. And that's, you know, a kind of term that's come back into fashion. But, you know, particularly in light of, I think, all of the discussion of healthcare reform, etc., that it's, you know, certainly very true that in the United States, maybe even more so than here in Israel, more so than healthcare, we need to have a policy for wellness. That there are ways to keep people healthy in such a way that it would obviate many needs for healthcare and healing, particularly diet, particularly obesity, exercise, etc. So for the Rambam, the same is true. We're not just concerned with healing, we're also concerned with wellness and the type of daily maintenance, just like you have to talk about maintenance of health and body through diet, exercise, healthy living. The same is true for the spiritual side, that there has to be a kind of spiritual wellness, and that's what we get into tonight. The fourth chapter is quite long. We won't be able to finish it all tonight. But a programming note. Next Thursday, which is Thanksgiving for many of you joining us from the United States, so I imagine that the shiur might interfere with, if not the eating of turkey. It's probably a little too early for you now to eat your turkey at 2 in the afternoon, but certainly there must be a football game or a parade or something like that, whatever you folks do for Thanksgiving. But I will unfortunately be in London, where they don't celebrate Thanksgiving. So I'm 99% certain that we won't have shiur next week, unless I can arrange it to be at a computer at that time. But I'm assuming that we won't meet next week, but we'll be sending out an email at the beginning of the week to let you know for sure. The following Thursday night, which is December 2nd, is the second night of Hanukkah, and we won't be having shiur, because at the same time that we normally meet, there'll be a live gathering of a Web Yeshiva folk in Yerushalayim. If you are in Israel, or if you can come to Israel to see us, please join us in Yerushalayim on the second night of Hanukkah for a reception, a dinner, and a shiur with Rabbi Bravender, which will be taking place in Yerushalayim. If you haven't received it, you'll be getting information in the mail. So on Thursday night, the second night of Hanukkah, Web Yeshiva will be meeting there. And if you're not with us in Yerushalayim, you'll be able to watch Rabbi Bravender's shiur online, and that information will be coming out as well. Okay, so the Rambam says, what's in the chat here? Okay, there you go. So the Rambam says, Pulot asher hein tovot. The good deeds are pulot hashavot, the balanced actions, the equal actions, hamim utzaot bein shnei ktzavot, which are the mean or the average. There's a difference between average and mean, mathematical mean, but for our purposes, let's say the average between the two extremes. Now, here the Rambam discusses a theory which he will, many years later, develop further in the beginning of Hilchot which is, known to us colloquially as the golden mean, the middle path. That good actions are those which are balanced between two extremes. Sheshnehem ra, that both extremes are bad. Ha'echad mehen yitur v'acher chisur. Between excess and abnegation, the middle path is the way to go. So the Rambam describes this notion. If you imagine a continuum, first of all, you have to imagine that what I just drew was a straight line. But let's imagine it's a spectrum between two extremes. Every personality trait. Here the Rambam speaks of pu'ulot, of actions. In Hilchot Deot, he begins explicitly describing deot, or what we call midot, or personality traits. But every personality trait, every inclination, every personal characteristic lies someplace on a continuum. The extremes are always bad, and the middle path is the proper one, is the good way to go. Hama'alot hein tchunot nafshiyot v'kinyanam. These types of virtues, which we've discussed in some detail until now, hamimutza'im ben shtei tchunot ra'ot, ha'achat mehem yitera v'acheret chasera, u'min ha'tchunot ha'elo yitchayvu ha'pu'lot ha'hein. Mishal zeh ha'zihirut. So he takes by way of an example. Zihirut, which is a type of caution, let's say, is a proper attitude, it's a proper attribute that one should subscribe to. But that personality trait of zihirut is a midah mimutzat. It's an average. It's a balanced. It's a midpoint trait. Bein rov hata'ava uvein he'edar ha'argasha b'hana'a. So that we can imagine two extremes. A kind of what the Rambam calls rov hata'ava, excess appetite and desire, and a kind of lust versus der hargasha b'hana'a, a complete inability to derive any pleasure from anything. Imagine these two typologies. It's hard to imagine meeting these people in real life, anybody that's fully at one extreme or the other, although you might think of some addictive personalities that you've met, if not in real life, then in literature or the arts, where very often authors like to use these kinds of extreme personalities because they illustrate something. So imagine these two traits: somebody who's a glutton, somebody who's just almost in all regards, somebody who's just driven by appetite, and on the other hand, somebody who derives no pleasures. Neither of them are good. But the interesting thing for the Rambam is that they're really the same person, in the sense that they are the two extreme perversions of the same spectrum. And finding the midpoint between them is what we should aim for. Zihirut hi mipulot hatov. Asher titchayev mimena. Hazirut hi ma'ala mimalat hamidot. The virtuous path is to find the midpoint between everything. Amnam rov ha'ta'ava hu ha'katzeh ha'rishon, he'eder ha'hargasha b'hana l'gamrei ha'katzeh ha'achron. Gluttony and inability to, versus inability to derive any pleasure, neither of them are good, and they are in fact merely the two extremes of the same exact midah. Vishnehem ra gamur. Both of them are completely wrong, completely evil, completely improper. Vishte tchunot ha-nefesh, asher mehen mitchayvu rov ha-ta'ava, v'hi tchuna ha-yetera, v'heder ha-hargasha, v'hi tchuna ha-chasira, shteihem p'tichyot mipchituyot ha-midot. Both of the extremes, one which is an excess of something and one in absence of it, both of them are bad and have to be avoided. V'chein ha-ayin ha-yafeh. Mimutzat bein hakamtsanut v'habizbuz. He gives a number of other examples, one being ayin yafeh is a kind of generosity. A generosity. The Gemara talks about different midot in giving. You can give with an ayin yafeh is a nickname for somebody that gives what he's able to give freely. But that is an intermediary attribute between kamtsanut, between stinginess and greed, Scrooge, and pazranut, somebody that gives away all their money, which sounds like a nice thing, but in fact really isn't, because it's completely irresponsible. Because by if he gives away everything that he has, if he gives away everything that he has, so then he becomes an ani. He becomes then dependent upon the chesed of others. So that's also improper. It's bizbuz. Gvura. A third example. Gvura might be translated as courage. We talk about ezehu gibor, hakovesh et yitzro, the Mishnah in Avot. That somebody who's a gibor, somebody who has strength, who has fortitude, is someone who's able to exercise a level of self-control. So gvura has these different shades of meaning. Gvura, courage, is a midah mimutzat bein hamesira lesakanut v'roch levav, between somebody who's foolhardy, who's evil Knievel, puts himself in harm's way for no purpose, versus somebody who's a coward. Obviously, neither of those two extremes is proper, but a middle path is correct. Our friend and colleague and teacher Rabbi Yitzhak Blau, who I'm sure some of you study with or read on his articles that appear on the Web Yeshiva blog. He wrote a very interesting article in the Torah Umada journal not long ago. It's available on the website of yutorah.org, and it's entitled, "Is Courage a Jewish Value?" And he discusses this very topic. It's an interesting piece. You can find it on that website. Another example, v'abtichut mimutzat bein hololut v'hakehut, a healthy sense of humor is essential to a well-tuned personality. A healthy sense of humor is essential to the religious life. And it's the intermediary middle path between hololut, which is antithetical to a meaningful thinking religious life. Hololut, it might be translated as, you know, just excess jocularity, somebody who's imagine like the cartoon of the guy that's had the laughing gas versus somebody who's got no personality, who's got no sense of humor whatsoever. Those kinds of people are usually very difficult to tolerate, not only because of our own flaws, but because there's a type of necessity to engage in healthy human interaction, and the ability to be happy and the ability to find pleasure and the ability to have enjoyment from human interaction. These are all necessary. These are all necessary traits of the religious personality. Anava, modesty. We talk about Moshe Rabbeinu being anav mikol adam, the most modest person. Mimutzat bein ha-ga'ava v'ashiflut ha-ruach. Modesty is a balance between arrogance and ego and a kind of sense of worthlessness. Neither of them are good. We will see momentarily or next time the Rambam points to ga'ava, arrogance, ego, as a particularly negative and powerful negative trait. But anava, modesty doesn't mean that you think you're nothing. Modesty requires you to have a deep self-awareness of your own worth and to still be modest. Somebody who thinks that they're a nothing, that they're a garnished, is unable to be modest. That's not what modesty is. Modesty is not thinking that you're a nothing. Modesty is knowing your worth and still being able to interact with other people and to have healthy relationships and to not put yourself above anyone else. You know, we talk about Ve'ohavta l'orecha kamocha, ze klal gadol b'torah, in the famous story of the ger, or the prospective ger, and Hillel and Shammai, when he comes to find kol ha'torah kula al regal achat, he wants to be taught the Gemara and Shabbos, he wants to be taught the entire Torah on one foot, as it were, summed up into a nutshell. So Hillel, of course, famously tells him, basically tells him, ve'ahavta l'orecha kamocha, though it's formulated as, whatever is hateful to you, don't do to the next person. But it's a kind of mirror image of the idea of ve'ahavta l'orecha kamocha, that you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. So implicit in the obligation to love your fellow man is that you first have to love yourself. That in order to love someone else the way you love yourself, you first have to love yourself. If you think that you're worthless, someone who thinks that he or she is worthless is unable to fulfill ve'ahavta l'orecha kamocha properly. Because if he doesn't love himself, he's unable to love others. And that's that kind of self-awareness and that kind of ability to be self-reflective and to be appreciative of oneself, that is anava. That's modesty. That's a kind of modesty. It's not this sense of thinking that you're worthless. It's a middle path. It's a very deep self-awareness and regard for oneself that's kept in balance. Another example, nidivut. Nidivut is similar to ayin yafeh. It's a type of generosity between reckless abandon and stinginess. Vahistapkut. Histapkut is a sense of ezahu ashir, hasameach bechelko. Who's a rich person? Says the Mishnah Navot, someone who is happy with his lot. So histapkut is a kind of satisfaction within limits. Is an intermediary path between avata mamon, between love of money. The Poskin Mishlei says that if you want a lot of, if you love money, you'll never be satisfied with money, right? In other words, you make a lot of money, so you say, well, how much more money do you need? What's the answer? A little bit more. It's always, you know, just a little bit more. You know, it's like the contraption that they make to get the donkey to move, to pull the grindstone. So they hook up a stick in front of him with a carrot dangling off of it, so that as the donkey moves forward, the carrot moves forward, and the donkey keeps chasing around and around to catch the carrot, which he can't because every step he takes, the carrot is moved forwards. So the desire, the goal line for how much money do you want, usually continues to recede into the horizon the more that you have. So a sense of satisfaction of being sameach bechelko, of realizing that there are limits to how much one needs and how much should want. On the other hand, atzlut, a kind of laziness, you know, a sense that I don't need to work for anything, and then getting yourself into all types of, even if not merely financial problems, but a sense that you can't accomplish what you want to accomplish in life and provide for yourself and your family in a way that needs to be done in a manner to maintain a certain... Now, this, of course, has nothing to do with the fact that there are people who have all of the proper midot and yet still are afflicted with the challenges, the very real challenges, the financial challenges that, you know, unfortunately in the past few years people have been feeling, in a sharper way than they may have in the past. Even if you have all the proper midot, it doesn't mean that your bank account automatically is what it could be, should be, ought to be, even with the proper midot. But the Rambam's not prescribing some type of magic hocus pocus for the way that your life, you know, will automatically be perfect. He's describing the type of midot that one should have, which might be necessary in order to achieve that, although it's not a magic formula. To be forbearing is a middle path between anger. Again, anger and ga'ava for the Rambam are, we'll see as we move on, for the Rambam, anger and ego are two particularly dangerous midot. But there's a middle path between anger and feeling nothing and having no emotional reaction, etc. The Rambam goes on, v'chein shara midot, and similarly this is true for every single personality trait. V'lo yitzterchu l'shemot munachim lehem dafka, im yu anyanim musagim muvanim. We don't need to enumerate every midah, and it's possible that we can't enumerate every midah. The Rambam is aware that the personality is not merely a collection of 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 different traits that, as it were, we could put like the personality into a I'm sorry, I'm a little tired tonight. The words are escaping me. What's that thing that you put the entity in, you spin it around, and it separates it out into its different parts? Thank you very much, a centrifuge. You can't put the personality into a centrifuge and separate it out into 50 different midot. The Rambam is aware that this type of defining of ideas is it's meant to be illustrative. It's not meant to be completely it's not meant to be a type of post-mortem on the anatomy of the personality. It's more complicated than that. And all of these different midot are actually, it's more like a chulent. In other words, once you cook it together into a personality, you can't separate it out into its component parts. And all of these midot are interrelated. Anger and arrogance and generosity and these things all factor out. So don't think that the Rambam is saying that, you can slice it in such a way that we can look at each one under a microscope. But he's trying to demonstrate the array of different the array of different observable actions. And again, it's important to notice that all of these things they there's all they, it all plays out into observable action. The personality, the abstract personality traits get translated into the way we interact with the world, and very often, in the majority of these things, we're talking about the way we interact with our fellow man. Although there are traits that are more dominant when it comes to our Bein Adam LaMakom, our interactions with God. But all of these traits seem to be very strongly balanced towards the Bein Adam L'Chavero side, which may make sense that that's the realm of how the personality plays itself out. Ufa'amim yit'u b'nei Adam be'elu ha'pu'ulot. V'yachshavu echad mishnei k'tzavot tov. Occasionally, people will make an error and think that one or the other of the extremes is good, and will think that it's virtuous to be an extremist on one or another of the midot. Pa'amim yachshavu hakatzeh harishon tov, kemosh yachshavu hamsira lesakanut ma'ala. People will make a mistake, and they'll think that somebody who rushes in to danger, that's a malata amida. V'yikru hamosrim atzmam lesakanot giborim, and somebody that puts himself in danger's way will think that they're a hero. U'kishiyiru'u mishuhu b'tachlit ahistaknut v'simat nafsho b'kapo u'mapil atzmo l'mita b'kavana. So somebody that does something and he'll put himself in danger's way and he'll literally be throwing himself to death. It's suicide. And maybe by accident or by coincidence, he won't end up dead. So we'll think he's a hero. Now, the Rambam's not talking about first response rescuers. And he's not talking about firemen that sometimes rush into a burning building. That's something else. Those are people that have been trained. Two people, I who don't know a thing about it, and a trained firefighter rush into a burning building, it's two different things altogether. He's been trained, and he has the equipment to the best degree possible minimize his risk. And the only reason he does run into that burning building is in order to potentially, hopefully, save another life, which is, after all, one of our prime values. The Rambam is not talking about that. The Rambam is talking about evil Knievel. The Rambam is talking about people who, for no purpose whatsoever, will do something to, I mean, there are purposes. Their purpose is maybe to make money or to become famous or other types of improper motivations in this regard. But they'll jump over the Grand Canyon on a motorcycle or what have you. I trust that you're all old enough to remember Evel Knievel. That's just putting yourself in danger's way. That's just putting yourself in danger's way. And that's ridiculous. And society will mistakenly yishabchuhu bezeh. They'll praise him. And they'll say, this is a hero. This is a courageous man. No, that's ridiculous. Ufa'amim yachshavu hakatzeh ha'achron tov. And on the other hand, sometimes society will consider the opposite extreme to be good. V'yamru al ne'edar gasha habizayon savlan. Somebody that has no regard for bizayon, no regard for embarrassment or busha, someone will suffer all types of indignities without saying anything. You know, the idea of turn the other cheek, that's happens to be a quote from the New Testament. And we'll look at that person and say, oh, he's such a savlan. He's so patient. He's so long-suffering. No, that's not proper either. One should not allow himself one should not allow himself to be abused. Right? Somebody who allows himself to be abused is doing something improper. And we do something improper when we say, oh, what a tzaddik that person is. You shouldn't get angry. But yeah, sometimes have to make amacho. Sometimes you have to protest. Sometimes you have to stand up for yourself or for your community or for your family or for your values or fill in the blank, right? And to be a carpet and to let everybody walk over all over you and what you believe in and what you represent, that's not proper. And anybody that thinks that that's a form of righteousness, that the person is such a savlan, he's so patient, he's so long-suffering, that's also a mistake that we ascribe to one of the extremes that that's a value. Va'al ha'atzel, mistapek b'chelko. Somebody who's just completely lazy, right? Somebody who doesn't make an effort to accomplish anything, either to earn money or to accomplish things. So he's a bum, and we say no, he's mistapek bechelko, he's happy with his lot. No, when we say ezehu ashir, who is a rich person, somebody who's happy with his lot, that's assuming that he's working to accomplish something. That he's working to accomplish something. You know, everybody has these lottery fantasies, whether you actually buy a lottery ticket or not. You know, I almost never buy a lottery ticket. But every now and then, every couple years, every 10 years, there's like one of these crazy, it happens more in America, I think. But there'll be like some like crazy, wild jackpot, you know, hundreds of millions of shekel. And the whole country goes crazy. So you get wrapped up in it. You buy a lottery ticket. So you know, you buy a lottery ticket. I buy a lottery ticket. I get in the car. I drive home. And in the 15 minutes it takes to drive home, I've spent all the money, you know, in my head. So people have that lottery feel. Like, what would you do if you did hit it rich? If you struck it rich, what would you do? So I always say I would get up the next morning and go to work. And I'd like to believe that that's true. I'd like to believe and I hope this is true, hope this is true for you, that everybody, no matter what you do, whatever your profession is, you, please God, you have a sense that you're doing something important, that you're contributing something to society, to fellow man, to the world. You're producing something, you're earning your living honestly and with dignity. Whatever, it doesn't matter whatever you do, whether you're a doctor or a rabbi or somebody that cares for the sick, or whether you're a shoemaker or a gardener or a butcher or a baker, lo misha, whatever it is that you do, you should get satisfaction from your work, and you should feel that somehow you're contributing to Yishuvo Shel Olam. But if you struck it rich, what, like, would you sit at home and eat donuts all day? You know, wouldn't you want to continue to contribute? Or maybe you wouldn't have to take a salary. Maybe you'd be able to take off a little more time and dedicate it to the important things, the other important things in life, family and whatever. But wouldn't you want to continue to work? Nothing wrong with donuts. Again, for the Rambam, everything in moderation. There's here, very close to me in Alon Shvut, is Yeshivat Har Etzion, one of the flagships of the Yeshivot Hesder in Israel. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who is the Rosh Yeshiva, I once heard him tell the following story. Someone asked him about considerations in choosing a career. And he said a number of things, but he told the following story. At the yeshiva in Alon Shvut, they have the very lovely, lovely facility, and they have very nice garden. They have very nice landscaping around the yeshiva. It's a very lovely place. I don't know, I'm sure some of you must have visited at some point. And there was this one man, I think he actually recently passed away, unfortunately, but there was one man who was responsible for the, you know, I guess he was the groundskeeper, something like that. And Rabbi Lichtenstein was the Rosh Yeshiva. Both of them lived in Yerushalayim at a certain point. And Rabbi Lichtenstein would drive every day from Yerushalayim to Alon Shvut in order to get to the yeshiva. I'm sorry, hold on one second. Banot Sheket! One day he's driving out to the yeshiva, and he sees standing, you know, at the Trempiada, at the place where people wait to get a lift, he sees this groundskeeper waiting for a lift, and he hesitates to pick him up, because the groundskeeper is known as a lovely fellow, very gregarious, very outgoing, very chatty. And he knew if he picked him up, the fellow was going to chit-chat the whole way out to the yeshiva. And Rabbi Lichtenstein said, you know, I need that time, the drive out to the yeshiva, in order to gather my thoughts and to review what I'm going to be teaching that day, and to go over, you know, the Gemara that I'll be teaching. And then, of course, he felt bad, because here's this man, he works for him. He's going to let him stand there. He's going to let him stand there and drive by. So, of course, he picks him up. The fellow gets in the car. They say good morning to each other. And then he doesn't open his mouth the rest of the ride. He doesn't say a thing. They get out to the yeshiva 20 minutes, a half hour later. And the groundskeeper says to him, Kvod Harav, I apologize. I hope you don't think I was being rude or antisocial, but I find that on the ride out to the yeshiva in the morning, I need that quiet time to think about what work needs to be done and what needs to be planted and what needs to be pruned and to organize everything I need to do. So Rabbi Lichtenstein told this story in response to the question of considerations that people should take in choosing a profession. He said, being a Rosh Yeshiva, to me, shouldn't be more important than being a gardener is to this man. It's that whatever your chosen profession is, you should view it with the same seriousness and the same sense of responsibility and that same sense of satisfaction that a Rosh Yeshiva has from being a Rosh Yeshiva, that a physician has from being a physician. That's the type of attitude that one should have to his profession. That it's a serious thing. You're contributing to the society. You're contributing to the world. You earn your living with respect. And that's the sense that this, to be mistapek b'chelko, is the proper midah. And the other perversions of that midah are improper. The Rambam goes on again with more. It would be a Hasidish story, except it's told about a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva. Vze kulo taut. All of these errors, all of these misascriptions to all of these misascriptions are error. Misascribing value and virtue to any type of extremist position is a mistake. Va'amnam yishubach be'emet ha'mitzua. The middle path is the praiseworthy path. Va'alav ra'ui la'adam l'chavein. V'yishkol pulatav kulan tamid elze ha'mitzua. And a person should constantly direct himself l'chavein. Here, the term yichavein, like kavana in tefillah, we know that kavana, intent in tefillah, means a type of aim, hitting the mark, fine-tuning. And a person should constantly weigh his actions in order to be balanced, in order to be on the mid-path, the middle road. The Rambam goes on, Vida, and you should know, Ki elu hamalot v'apchituyot asher lemidot, amnam yikanu v'yityashvu benefesh b'chazara ala pulot ha'ovot mizeh amida pa'amim rabot bizman aroch. How do you accustom yourself to walk the middle path? So again, the Rambam is very much a behavioralist in this regard. He thinks that you can condition yourself, like almost like Pavlov's dog, if you pardon the comparison, that if over time you accustom yourself, v'hitragleinu aleihem, you mitragel, you accustom yourself, you make it a hergel, you habituate yourself to being balanced, to walking the middle path, that's the way to do it. V'im yu apulot ahem tovot, yia hanikne lanu mala. V'im yu ra'ot, yia hanikne lanu p'chitut. If you habituate yourself to the proper path, that's virtuous. And if, God forbid, you become habituated, you fall into the habit of the wrong path, that is the opposite. That's the absence of virtue. Umipnesha adam betivo. Mitchilat briyoto, eino lo bal ma'ala velo bal chesaron, kemoshni var beperek hashmini, and like I will explain in the eighth of these eight chapters, by nature we are tabula rasa. The Rambam seems to feel that by nature we are neither this nor that. We're neither inherently virtuous nor inherently lacking in virtue. Tabula rasa, a blank slate on which we can build our personality. Now, the Rambam is aware that people have nitiot, that people have certain inclinations. He seems to be saying that largely those inclinations are acquired. I'm pretty sure the Rambam was aware that there are certain inborn inclinations. The Gemara seems pretty clear to say that it's aware that there are certain people that have certain inborn inclinations. These inborn inclinations that the Gemara describes may be somewhat stereotypical, but even though we're aware there might be certain genetic proclivities towards certain traits, principally we're conditioned by our experiences. V'hu yitragel below safek lepulot mikatnuto kfi minhag krovav anshe midinato. But principally, a person will become conditioned from his youth, from the time he is small, by those that are surrounding him, his relatives, his friends, the people of his society, the place he grows up in. V'efshar shiyu otan hapulot mimutzaot. Could be that a person will grow up with the proper middle path midot. V'efshar shiyu motirot o michasrot. Or could be that a person will grow up with excess or absence, with one of the imbalances. And again, to be clear, for the Rambam, that's yellow, so that's no good. Doesn't show up really well. If we imagine, there you go. If we imagine the extremes. And we're aiming for the middle. There are different points on the spectrum where one might fall. It's not all or nothing. It's not either the middle or one of the extremes. You might be slightly off balance. And that's probably the case for most of us. So when someone has an imbalance, being pulled to one or the other extreme, tzarich she yinhagu berfuato kederet berfuato gufot b'shaveh. So he needs to heal himself. He needs repair the same way that we would repair him if he had a physiological ailment. Ukimo shaguf kasher yetzei mishivyo nire el ezet sad natav yatsa v'na'amod kenegdo behefcho ad sheyashuv el hashivui. So just like with physical health, and here the Rambam is reflecting medical knowledge as he knew it. And it could be that our sense of medical knowledge has changed so that the metaphor no longer completely works, but it's only a metaphor. So the nimshal, the case of the personality adjustment, what he's saying may still be sound, even though the mashal to physical medicine is incorrect. There was, of course, a notion of the bodily humors of a kind of, chemical. I mean, we now, it could be that it's what goes around comes around. We now talk about chemical imbalance in the brain, but a notion that if something was physically wrong with you, it meant something was imbalanced. That may not technically be true, but it's true metaphorically. I mean, we still speak that way. We say, oh, there's something, I'm off whack. I'm off balance. So that idea of trying to bring the physical body back into balance, back into wellness, is true for the spiritual side as well. Ukeshi yishtaveh nisalek yadenu me'oto ha'efech. Sometimes, if you're out of balance, we need to counter that with the opposite. And that by countering it with the opposite, we will be pulled back into balance. כאן נעשה במידות בשווה. משל זה, אם נראה אדם שנקנתה לו תכונה בנפשו, if a person realizes that he's acquired a personality trait, if something's gone off balance, יקמץ בעבורה עם עצמו, וזוהי פחיתות מפחיתויות הנפש, והמעשה אשר יעשה מפעולות הרע, כמו שבערנו בזה הפרק. הנה כאשר נרצה לרפא זה החולי, לא נצטווהו בעין יפה, שזה כמי שירפא מי שגבר עליו החום בדבר השווה, וזה לא יבריאו בחליו. So let's say a person recognizes that he's been a little stingy, that his, by nature, it's hard for him to give. I was a number of years ago with someone who I have no fear will hear this recording, so I can say it and know that I won't cause him anguish by listening to it. I was with someone somewhere, and a poor person came up to us. You know, here in Yerushalayim, there's no shortage of poor people, unfortunately. Schleppers, schnorrers, beggars. A person put his hand out, and this fellow that I was with responded in just the most, I thought, cruel way. Now, it's true that we don't always put our hands into our pocket the way that we could or the way that we should, and we don't always give with a full heart. You know, that's the way we are. But this person was, he just responded with such cynicism, verbal cynicism to the beggar, that I thought it was just so, it just shocked me. So if a person should realize that they have that in their soul, that they can't give, even if they give because other people are watching, right? But they give with, you know, resentment, or they give with negativity, or they don't give. So if you recognize that you have that in your personality, so it's not enough to force yourself to go back to the middle and to give, you know, in a normal way. You should overcompensate and give extra, even though you might, you know, the halacha codifies how much tzedakah you should give. How much tzedakah you should give, which is a strange thing. The idea of codifying something which is meant to be a voluntary act. But that's one of the paradoxes of tzedakah. So if you know that you have this stinginess about you, you should be extra generous. You should be extra generous. And that going beyond is itself a part of the cure. So that you're supposed to be here. If you recognize that really you're there, you have to overcompensate and be here so that ultimately you can come back into balance here. How long that takes, how it works, these are things that the Rambam will continue to describe in the continuation of this important fourth chapter, which will take us some time to get through. For the Rambam, however, there are a few important ideas that we should just highlight before we conclude. One is Ka'asher nirtse lirape zehacholi. So first of all, for the Rambam, I mean, not to turn the Rambam into the father of a 12-step program, for the Rambam, it's necessary that the person want to heal himself want to rid himself of these negative personality traits. Recognizing that you have a problem is the first step. Now, the Rambam is not taking a page out of the playbook of Alcoholics Anonymous, although some of those ideas in these 12-step programs, Alcoholics Anonymous, etc., resonate a lot with what the Rambam is saying. Certainly in Judaism, we don't believe them. I mean, on the contrary, we believe, as he'll go on to say, the second half of the fourth chapter is, I've mentioned this before, the Rambam's screed against asceticism, because asceticism is a type of extremism. The Rambam points out that Judaism believes in enjoying all of the pleasures of the world, the pleasures of gastronomy, eating, drinking, the pleasures of physical intimacies with a husband or a wife. But everything in its right time, and everything with a certain surrounding framework of limitations which imbibe, which serve to create an environment in which the partaking of those pleasures are acts of holiness instead of acts of lust and appetite. So for the Rambam, for example, we on the contrary, alcohol is, there's nothing prohibited about drinking alcohol. Somebody actually just sent, somebody sent me this article about prohibition, that during prohibition in the United States, unfortunately, it wasn't such a great Kiddush Hashem, but that there was a dispensation for, rabbis to distribute wine for Kiddush. There was a certain ration that was given out per family for how much wine could be given out, and this was at times abused. But for us, Judaism, the idea of prohibition is foreign to us. On the other hand, although Jews always drank, liquor was always a part of Jewish life. Kiddush on Shabbat and Yontif, and even a good l'chaim from time to time. Even though liquor and drinking was always part of the fabric of Jewish life, drunkenness was always frowned upon. It was always anathema. So that this idea of the balance of being built in. On the other hand, it's correct that if somebody, God forbid, has a real problem with liquor, it's not enough to go to the middle path. You have to overcompensate and never touch it, and use grape juice for Kiddush, and don't have a l'chaim after shul, because you have to overcompensate for the fact that you know that you are drawn to one of those very strong, powerful forces on the extreme. So for the Rambam, recognizing that you have a problem, like they say in the 12-step programs, wanting to change is the first step. And this resonates very much with what the Rambam says at the very beginning of Hilchot Tshuva. Recognizing, if you want to do tshuva, if you've sinned and you want to do tshuva, you want to repent, recognizing hakarat achet, recognizing your sin, vidui, confessing your sin, admitting to it, are the necessary prerequisites to Kabbalah al ha'atid, resolve for the future. So just like in Hilchot Tshuva, if somebody's eaten non-kosher food, if somebody's stolen something, whatever the prohibition is, so to hear in the repair of the personality flaw, recognition of the problem is the first step. So we will continue this discussion as the Rambam gets even more and more practical. We'll continue the discussion again probably in 3 weeks' time. We'll send out an email next week, but 99% we won't be meeting next week on Thanksgiving, and certainly not the following week on Hanukkah. But again, if you're able to make it, I hope to see you in person on 2 weeks from tonight on Hanukkah, in Yerushalayim, and hopefully we will find it. If we do miss 2 weeks, we will bli neder find a time to add a class to make up for the miss. Alan asks here, while balance is key, history and context seem to evolve over time. Where does the Rambam look to base his guidelines on? Alan, I'm not sure. Refine your question. What do you mean? You have a microphone on? And the sense of, right. Could be, yeah, absolutely. A lot, not completely, but it could be that there are subjective components of what's considered normal. Well, that's an interesting question. The Ram, the right. So this is one of the places where I mentioned by way of the beginning, the Rambam does draw on. The Rambam does draw on a certain. Classical philosophical sources, and here he's drawing very strongly on Aristotle's. Aristotle has this idea of the golden mean, which plays itself out in a lot of different fields, including aesthetics, including architecture, mathematics, etc., but also in terms of this notion of the personality. So a lot of this text is drawn almost, some of it word for word, from Aristotle and or from Al-Farabi. These were figures that I mentioned in the introductory session. So the Rambam is certainly basing himself on those. In terms of the specific examples of each personality trait that he goes through, it could be that there's some. Look, some of the things that he says were true in the 12th century, and they're still completely true today. But it could be that there are certain societal norms that change how we view what excess is, and one imagines that he would be open to that. One imagines that he would be open to that, so that. Well, like for example, the Gemara mentions this idea of how much tzedakah a person can or should give, and the Gemara limits how much tzedakah a person can give, a certain percentage of your income. You can't give more than that. But what if you're Bill Gates? As if Bill Gates gave away 90% of his fortune, he'd still have 10 times more money than the rest of us all put together, and would still be able to live a very comfortable life. Now, I think that he is giving away a lot of his money, although I don't think he's giving away 90% of his money. But it could be that the Gemara or the Rambam could not conceive or did not conceive of someone whose fortune was so vast that it literally outbalanced, the rest of the world. In a case like that, although the Gemara is aware that there were certainly very, very, very rich people. So it could be that a sense of what's proper to do, what the middle path in a case like that might be. So that might be an example of, something where you have a societal reality which is even exceeds the notions that Chazal might have had of what a very, very, very wealthy or the most wealthy person might have been. So I agree that there's probably some subjective component here in terms of in terms of addressing specific examples, but the underlying principle, I think, is objective. Okay. We'll end it there.